You are listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond, where hosts from the LCC Library sit down with writers, publishers, entrepreneurs, and literary enthusiasts of all types. Join your hosts, Amy Ewell, Robin Moore, John Salaichi, and Abby Tebow as we explore the very heart of the written word.
Welcome to Written in the Stars, Book and Beyond. I'm Robin Moore, joined by my co-host, Amy Ewall. Today, we are thrilled to welcome a very special guest, Robin Pizzo. Robin serves as the Director of Education at WKAR. She's also an accomplished author, the founder of her own publishing company, a former educator, and a proud former LCC employee. Robin, welcome back.
Yay, I'm so excited to be here and so very honored. This is so, so wonderful to me.
Well, you know, it is such a joy to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Yes. So I am Director of Education at WKAR at Michigan State University. It is your Capital Region PBS station. So I am all things PBS Kids. I am also the Regional Director of the Michigan Learning Channel. So the Michigan Learning Channel is a statewide partnership of all of the PBS stations across Michigan, and each station has a responsibility to provide 24/7 quality Michigan programming for children that really focuses on state standards-based education resources, and they are programming that have been developed by Michigan teachers, and many of the shows on the channel are hosted by Michigan teachers.
Oh my gosh, your job sounds so amazing.
Yes.
And you're smiling from like ear to ear.
I love my work. I always tell my kids, I'm a PBS kid for life. And so I grew up with it. My children grew up with PBS Kids programming, learned a whole lot about alphabets and math and how to care for one another and who are the helpers.
Yes.
And I continue that legacy with the work that I do. And so I'm really, really excited about being able to do that.
I love that. I love Arthur. I'll just say that.
Yes.
But Robin, who or what inspired you to be a writer? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So as a writer, I can't remember a time when I wasn't a writer. My mother said when I was about 4 or 5, I was writing stories and I was telling stories. And my first published piece was actually a little bit of sadness, but I have this memory forever because it was in my grandmother's homegoing or funeral program. I wrote a poem and my mother surprised me and published it in the program. Mm. And it was about my grandmother and I's relationship. I grew up with her in the home and I loved her dearly. So when I was about 13, she passed away and it sort of broke my heart. And the way I always found healing was through writing. Mm. I would write poetry or stories and I wrote a poem and my mother published it. And so that meant it went in the paper because that was a part of her obituary and the announcement of her passing. So that was the first time. So I would say I can't really say who inspired me to write stories, but who was major inspiration in me being a storyteller was both my mother and my grandmother. They would sit and tell stories all evening long, all summer long. They would sit on the porch and they would tell stories. They would even sort of hide some of the story because, you know, little listening ears shouldn't hear everything about family gossip. But the stories just were always lively and entertaining. And my grandmother, she was blind. She was bedridden. She was in congestive heart failure and diabetic most of my childhood growing up with her. But she was a powerhouse of a woman. And she had had 8 children, migrated from the South for a better life for them. And she was the matriarch of our family. And she held the stories. And she regularly would tell us stories. Sometimes they would be spooky and scary. And sometimes sometimes they would just be like really balm of our history as a family. And that I have tried to carry on in my writing.
Well, you're doing it because you're just sharing that. You're telling a story. And I'm like, tell me more.
Yes.
Tell me more about your family. What else did you all talk about? Yes. I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I also heard that healing was in your writing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So a lot of people may not know this about me, but I actually was adopted out of foster care at the age of 5 to my mother, my single mother, and her mother, my grandmother. My mother had wanted a child. She had already adopted one daughter when she was a baby. And when that daughter turned about 6 or 7, she really started tugging on her to say, I want a sister. I want a sister. My mother still wasn't married, didn't have a relationship, was not having a baby. And so she said, I'll adopt again. And it needed to be an older child because my sister was older and she wanted playmate. And my mother thought, yeah, we can do this again. They adopted me. There was some times within that because my birth mother struggled with some mental illness and she immediately found out that I was being adopted and she had began to try to abduct me back. And so in that process, there were some tumultuous crisis, traumatic times, elementary years, moving into middle school. And writing just became a way for me to get my emotions and feelings and to tell stories that allowed me to perhaps escape, perhaps understand, reflect what was happening, and to understand a little bit better about the world that was around me. There's one other major influence that was also helping in that healing, and that was my mother was a woman of faith. Mm-hmm. Our whole family were people of faith. And so Bible stories were major in our house. Instead of picking up a children's book to read a bedtime story, we typically went to bed with a Bible story, the story of Jonah or the brothers in the lion's den. Those stories were fantastical to me and as real as anything to me. And those stories really helped birth this understanding of how to tell a story, a beginning, middle, and end, a hero's journey, a villain, having a protagonist, an antagonist. Those stories really opened up a lot of that understanding for me. And then I continued to journey on and get my first degree in literature and then, you know, became a teacher that taught literature and English. And storytelling has just been a part of my journey my entire life.
Once again, I'm like, tell me more. Okay.
I was thinking as you were talking about families and that, and as my son and I were driving back from visiting some family yesterday, and we were chatting, and I said, oh, yeah. I said, they're always so much fun because they always have such good stories, right? That element of storytelling and family history that comes through and then, you know, helps my son to learn those things and learn about where he came from and the, you know, the people in his life. So it's storytelling's great, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Writing of them the way they need to be publishable can be a lot more difficult. Mm. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of gatekeeping to a lot of great stories from a diversity of writers. One of my missions is to just, one, tell people everyone has a story.
Yeah.
Everyone has a story. And if you have a story, if you feel like you have a book within you, write it, get it written, and then worry about polishing it and doing all the things that it needs to be, such as revisions and edits, to be actual publishable. Worry about that later, but capture that story. And I really have been pushing, even in this very technology-driven world, been pushing for it to be published and printed hard copy format. Something that can be preserved long time. Sometimes it's like those pictures in our phone.
Yes.
You take all of these pictures, they live in your phone. You spend hours scrolling through trying to find the one picture when you want to show someone how your kid has grown or some amazing thing your kid has done. And I feel like there's an element of losing some of that touch to it being an artifact, of your history.
Yeah.
And so I say, if you can go ahead and write that story, type it up, put it in a book, you can go to Staples, Michigan State University has a place where you can bind mm-hmm. it and put mm-hmm. it in a book for very little. Do the work to get it actually put in a book, because it will last a lifetime to me if you do that.
Yeah. Capturing those oral histories are so important, I think.
Absolutely.
Like you said, in this digital age, too, where often that gets lost, right? So it is important to get it on paper or somewhere, right? Where you can have that physically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to turn our conversation a little bit. You mentioned, talked a lot about families and the impact that your family has had in your own situation. So I want to kind of connect that a little bit to WKAR and your role there. So how does WKAR support and engage with local families, like especially right here in mid-Michigan?
Absolutely. So we have a robust partnership with a lot of different organizations all across mid-Michigan, where we will partner with them to do family engagements. Mm-hmm. We will actually bring programming such as some of our characters to the event. And then we introduce a lot of the educational materials that are connected to a lot of our programming, such as Word Girl or Daniel Tiger's social emotional learning, or perhaps you talked about Arthur with DW. There's a lot of supplemental materials connected to learning with those shows as well. And another thing about WKAR, which is so incredibly special, even though we are, yes, a TV broadcast channel, and yes, we are a radio, classical radio channel, but we also produce local programming. Mm. And so we have several children's local programming we produce in our studios right on the campus of Michigan State University that includes Curious Crew, Curious About Careers. Those are STEM-based programming for children. That is experimentation around science, technology, engineering, and math. And we have Curious Crew related investigations that we will bring out to schools, to local churches, to programs in the park, all types of family engagements. If you schedule with us, we'll try to put it on our calendar and we'll show up and set up and do some engaging with your audiences, your community members and children that are a part of the space, you know, and engage around our programming. So we do that a lot. Another thing that's been a priority of mine since I left LCC and went to Michigan State and WKAR is literacy. Mm-hmm. We know that there's been a tremendous literacy crisis for our children throughout mid-Michigan. I was a long time eighth grade teacher. Eighth grade, middle school was my jam. But I also taught fifth grade. I taught sixth grade. And I know how difficult it was for me to help students really become a champion as a reader and really foster a love of literacy in each child. It was a difficult task. They have a lot pulling them in all sorts of directions. Mm-hmm. Technology is major, you know, distraction oftentimes from really diving in deep and doing the very difficult work of learning how to read. And so because there's been a long time crisis, when I started there, I made a commitment that at every event, we would provide a free book to a child. Mm. We would set up a table full of really wonderfully high quality curated books, and they would be able to select a book at any event that they find us at. That's definitely something we offer as a gift to them. This year marks 100,000 books into the hands of children throughout mid-Michigan.
That's amazing.
Wow, that is 100,000
books.
Great
work. Yes.
I believe I can remember taking my son to an event in East Lansing, and I believe WKAR was there.
Yes.
And I think we were big fans of Curious George, chairs, and and the books and everything. So that is such great and important work that's being done. And so I want to kind of turn a little bit towards a little bit of a broader sense. Mm-hmm. We talked about right here in mid-Michigan.
Yes.
there's a lot of discussions, and there's even been, you know, congressional hearings about the funding of PBS and NPR. And maybe you could kind of help our listeners to understand and why you believe, because you seem very passionate about these things. Why do you think it's so important to fund these two media sources?
Yes. They really are just powerfully important to our community in what they provide and offer our children in developing as learners and as readers and as citizens in our society across our nation. We have programming that really impacts the true sense of community and diversity, and the importance of us working together to make sure our children have the resources and access to all of the learning that they could have to create possibilities for their future. We know that only about 43% of children are able to enroll in a preschool classroom across our state, and especially in our region. We just don't have enough classes and teachers and open spots for all of the children that need this help and great start into school readiness. And we offer that with a lot of our PBS Kids programming. We offer, lessons on the alphabet, on how to count, on how to be kind, and who are our helpers. We just are a station that really supports the learning and the growth and development of children. And without that funding, there will be a tremendous gap. There will be a tremendous void for many of our children that need this support, and for many of our families that need this support. One of the other things that we do and we are really proud of is our WKAR Reading Kit Project. And the WKAR Reading Kit Project started during COVID, where we had to shut down some of our literacy programming celebrations, where we would provide books and have characters come out and talk about how to engage with great books and get your kids reading. We had to cancel several of those programs. And after the second cancellation, I said, wait a minute, we have to find a way to help our parents. So just myself and a former principal who had retired joined me in a room all masked up and all safely distanced. And we put together some kits that will have two free books in them, along with resources in the community that connected families to basic needs, to preschool resources, to all of the things that they had need of, but didn't quite know if these programs were open or available or not because of what we were experiencing during that pandemic time. Some library resources were also included in there. And then a wealth of fun activities all around literacy was also a part of it. Some manipulatives, really cool maps, just really great. And we divided them based on age level so that the children would have an opportunity to get one that was age appropriate and families could help support with their continuing to learn, even though for many of us, we were mandated to be at home. We started that the first year. I said, if we just get out a couple of hundred, that would be great. We called up all of our community partners and said, hey, how many do you think you need? How many families are you actually working with that you can put these into their hands? And that first year, it was about 1,700 that we packaged and put together. That was like amazing, 3,200 books going out. Well, this year, this is our fifth year of doing the WKAR Reading Kit Project, and we did 11,550 kits.
Wow.
And they touched over 30 counties, not communities, counties, over 30 counties, and we worked with over 150 30 organizations to get those kits out. We even formed a new partnership with Farm Workers Migrant Assistance Program through the state of Michigan. And they are now have over 2,100 kits going to children who are growing our food, picking our food, harvesting our food. Yeah. They're often pulled out of school to do that work, and we're so thankful for them. And now they have those kits in their hands to continue learning, even in the midst of what their role is in our community.
That's such an excellent example of how, like, PBS and things like that touch in small communities all across the nation.
Yes, so absolutely.
It can make such a big impact.
Absolutely.
On folks and families throughout the United States.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely.
That's amazing,
Robin. And all of our stations across the nation can be found working, supporting, assisting communities in these powerful ways, especially for our children that need it the most, that may have the least amount of resources. Mm-hmm. This is one major touch that we make sure we do as a unified station.
Yeah, right.
That's amazing.
I love it. That impact. You are making such an impact with our children.
Yes,
with our children. And it's wonderful. And that leads me to a question about LCC.
Yes.
So you previously worked here at Mason Community College in many different roles.
Absolutely.
So how do you help college students find success? And what advice would you give a college student today?
Yes. My very first advice is stick with it. Stick with it. Education is not just about opening doors of opportunity. Yes, it does provide that. That certain doors are going to be open simply because you have stuck with your education and have earned a degree. That's really powerful. But what's also really powerful is that you're worth the learning. Mm. You're worth the continued growth in education. I'm thinking right now about a PhD program, and someone said, well, what are you going to do with that degree? And I said, it's not what I'm going to do with the degree. It's what the degree is going to do for me. Mm-hmm. The learning, the, you know, opening new understandings, the ability to start a program, stick with a program, struggle through the program. All of that just builds so much in your own confidence muscles. And yes, it can be difficult managing the financial end. It can be difficult managing all of the aspects of how you schedule it into your life and all of those pieces. But we know that research shows when there are children involved and they see a parent moving through the process of their education, it creates a higher level of achievement in that child. Mm-hmm. That child then wants to continue to work and grow in their own education, and they go further in school as their parents go further. And so there are so many benefits to finding your way in education. And sometimes you say, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do, but you're in the right place for you to find those open doors, those interests that really tug on your heartstrings, for you to get deeper involved in. You're in the right place. It's hard to be in the right place when you're just scrolling on your phone or in your house or in your bedroom gaming. Yeah. You kind of narrow that scope of what your life's potential could be. And so my really biggest advice is, I tell my own children, I have four, and I've always told them, listen, all roads lead back to education. All roads lead back to education. And it's always a good choice to get
that.
Your
it's an investment in yourself.
Absolutely.
Right? It's an investment
and
in yourself.
And you will get a return.
Yeah.
You will get a return.
Mm-hmm. And you deserve that.
Absolutely.
And I love that statement. You deserve that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Our roads lead to education. That's why we're here at Mansfield Community College.
Yes.
Tell us about, okay, so you were a success coach.
Yes. I was a success coach, and I was the director of the C Campus program. I haven't said that in quite a while. But the C Campus program was a really unique program that funded student parents. So if you were a parent that was moving through your academic program, I could come alongside you and help coach you academically, but I could also provide funding for you to finish your courses, and I could provide funding for you to put your child in high quality childcare, mm-hmm. which is, you know, leaps and bounds important to you successfully completing your education, that you know your child is somewhere safe, yes, yeah. and somewhere where they are going to grow and learn and be well taken care of and be loved on. Yes. And so I was the one that helped programs become high quality if they weren't, mm-hmm. so that they could then be able to enroll a child from a student of ours here at LCC. But I was also one who was able to just help you pay for the tuition to go into yeah. your child to go into a high quality childcare program. And for a long time, we had that here on campus.
We did. I remember that yes. program. We still have the building, actually.
Yes.
Yes. I was very, that's when I met you. I met you. You
absolutely.
Were in that role.
Absolutely. Yes.
That was an amazing program that really supported our students. And yeah, I'll yeah. just say that.
Yeah.
I'll just say it. I'll
so
say
I feel
that.
Like I've taught at every level. I've yeah. taught at the elementary level. I've taught at the college post-secondary level. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I'm a teacher in America's classroom working at PBS.
Oh, that's such a great way to say
yes.
it.
Yeah. And you are just that.
Yes.
So children's literature. So tell us about your work as an author now of children's literature and about your publishing
yes.
company. You kind of touched on that a little bit, but I remember you reading from your book
yes.
at the Women's Literature Read
yes.
last year,
yeah,
I think it
that's
was.
That's right.
Tell
that's
us about
right.
that book.
Yes, so I write a little bit of everything and a whole lot of gibberish. That's what I tell people. But my primary writing niche is children's literature, historical fiction, as well as contemporary and poetry. Mm-hmm. So those are sort of really where I've had my wheelhouse for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I like middle grade and YA also. And I'm just now diving deeper into some women's fiction. But my first picture book is a wonderful family story. My neighbor is a man that has farmed land his entire life. And in his backyard, he has almost an acre of land right here in Lansing. And he has, since we've lived across from him for over 20 years, farmed this land. But every year, what was so unique about it was he would grow tons and tons of vegetables and beans and all of these wonderful things, and then give it all away to his neighbors. And I just wanted to capture that story in a really fun, heartfelt children's book. And so JB's Big Old Garden is my first picture book that is all about JB and the main character being a kid who just wonders, like, why do you work so hard and then you don't even eat all of it? You give it all away, and it's hot out here, and there's bugs out here, and there's rocks out here. Why do you spend all your time in this garden when you could be doing other things? And there's this conversation that really talks about the power of how community mm-hmm. and gardening is for community, and gardens are for sharing, that happens between JB and this young man. And then there's also this aspect of history, because when I first had this very conversation with JB years and years ago, like, how did you get started with this? He talked about his father being someone who farmed land, but they were lucky because even though they were down south and they farmed this land, his father owned their land, but most of the families were sharecroppers. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, that was something that I did, was I actually collected oral stories of those who were sharecroppers and learned about a lot of the injustices that were connected to sharecropping mm-hmm. and what led to ultimately a lot of those families migrating north for better opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so there is a piece of the book that really talks about that history and how families really, because they had to give the very best mm-hmm. to the owner of the land that they came together to feed their families by sharing their gardens.
Yes.
And so that was a little lost in that migration aspect because we are urban cities, our cities of concrete and steel, right? And so we have less space to really have gardens.
Right.
And we've lost some of that history. It's coming back, though. It's coming back more powerfully.
Mm-hmm.
You see it all over social media.
Yeah.
You see families who are, you know, growing all of their food mm-hmm. now on their own land, mm-hmm. in their backyards, doing raised gardens, landscaping. Has a robust home garden support or community gardening.
Yeah.
Yes, it's huge mm-hmm. here with our City of Lansing resources. And so this is just a book that sort of captures that history mm-hmm. and then brings it forward with JB and this kid who sort of represents my sons and my daughters in the story.
I love it.
Yes.
I do. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
If you want to learn more about the publishing aspect and some workshops, Polish Pages.
Mm-hmm.
Polish Pages is my webpage where you can go on there, learn all about me, learn about how we can help and support with helping you become a writer and encouraging you and giving you confidence in your writing.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely one way to check out more about the writing life that I live.
That's wonderful. Because I guess our next question would have been like just some of the projects that you're working on, but it sounds like your publishing company.
Yeah.
That's what's up next for Robin P. So to assist and guide people. I love
it. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll just tell you, I am working on a book that's really stretching me very, very. It's my first historical fiction book. It's based in the city of Detroit and all throughout Michigan because it's the power of the Underground Railroad right here in Michigan and how these women who often don't get a whole lot of credit really helped preserve community and supported other women in establishing themselves once they came through that passageway to freedom.
That
Two
sounds
snaps
great.
And a circle.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll have to circle back when you're done and come back on the show and we can dive deep into your work there.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Robin, for sharing the space with us today and chatting and all your great stories.
Yes.
It was so fun. And we appreciate all your work and your efforts to provide that quality programming and literature to this community here at LCC and beyond and the Lansing area. So, and thank you to all of our listeners for listening today as well. And we will put all of the links and things like that and Robin's contact information in our show notes today. And I think that wraps it up.
Well, thank you.
Robin, thank you so much
for having me.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Written in the Stars, Books and Beyond. Visit lcc.edu/library to find the titles discussed in this episode. You can find previous episodes of Written in the Stars and other LCC Connect shows at lccconnect.com. In the words of Miguel de Unamuno, I hope, reader, we shall meet again and we shall recognize each other.